and roll and drugs thing of 2020. I'm like, oh my God. You know, what a thing to ask someone who's been through a lot of that stupidness. But that's a whole other podcast for you and I to do, I think.
Maybe that's the hour-long conversation.
The hour-long conversation of what's best for people now in society when it comes to conducting yourself as a musician or as a person in general with some dignity and maybe having a livelihood or something.
If you can get all those things together, then, you know, you've truly made it, not just as a musician, but a human being.
But as a human being. So, the Ready Ruckus, we were trying to figure out when was the last time you and I chatted, and you think it might have been early part of 2020 or 2019? Because did you start the record label before Ready Ruckus, or was it Ready Ruckus and then you did the label and brought some friends involved?
So the Ready Ruckus has been around for, I think, 8 years now. And the record label, I'm going to say, officially started in 2018.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, because you said, with Ready Ruckus, you were like 17 or something when you started that?
Yeah, so when I was, I guess I would have been 17 or 18. So basically what was happening at the time was I was in a rock band called Quetta Black, and we'd been together all throughout high school, and, you know, we had made some progress in terms of putting out music, and our biggest highlight was we were able to play the OLG stage at the Burlington Sound of Music, and that was, to us, the biggest show that we could have possibly ever done.
Dude, that's crazy.
And, yeah, it was really huge for us because the other guys were from Burlington, and, you know, it was such an important part of our lives. And but we were having some challenges in the sense that, you know, we were kind of having that kind of coming of age kind of story, like coming through our lives. And one guy said he didn't want to continue, and the other guys were fighting. And,
right,
you know, during this time, I kind of looked in the mirror and I was like, but all this is going on, but I still want to keep making music. So, kind of in that period between grade 12 and going to college, going to university,
yeah.
I just said, all right, well, I'm just going to keep writing songs and keep making music. And I was on a walk through the forest one day. I grew up in Dundas, and I was coming up with band names, and I came up with probably a few dozen, and
sure,
then the Ready Ruckus just stuck out, and I thought, okay,
yeah,
that's what it's going to be called. And so we're on, I think, year eight now.
With the Ready Ruckus, is any of the guys that you went to school with, are they still in the band, or is this like a whole new group of people you play with?
No, but it's really funny. So the guys that were in Quetta Black, they are not involved in the Ready Ruckus. But two of the other guys, they actually went to Steve Parton's music school, so Avalon Music Academy. So
right,
what was really funny was, so I had I was in a band class in Burlington with a thing called Rock This Way, and that's how I met the guys in Quetta Black. But before that, I was doing a band class at Avalon, and the other guys were also in that band class at one time or another. So Jackson and I were in the same class for a few years, and I was the drummer, and then I left the band class, and then Patrick joined as the drummer, and then, you know, that group of guys became a band called Out of the Blue, which eventually became a band called Allotrope. So we've been playing together like on and off because I used to sub in for Allotrope whenever Jackson couldn't make it for lead guitar. And, I even got to play with everybody like at the HMAs one year. And so we've been playing together for a long time. And actually the bass player, we met him through James, James Gould, who goes by James Alphonse. And they had a band together too, as they were doing the James Alphonse stuff. And then it just kind of came together over time. So just kind of knowing those guys for, the number of years that we did, and then finally being able to say, okay, well, you know, let's do something together, because I think those guys are great musicians, and I hope they think I'm a good musician.
And you know, some self doubt there as you said that.
Well, you know, I think it's better to be a little humble about your abilities rather than to be right. too arrogant about it. But right. that's just me.
Well, just hearing that, it sounds like that you were inspired by the people around you to keep up with the music. Even though when you were younger, you ran into some snags here and there, but you know, you kept on with it, and it sounds like you've enjoyed yourself up to this point to keep up. You mentioned that you went to school. What brought that on, going to music school?
Well, yes. So I was in high school. I went to Highland in Dundas there. But yeah, on the side, I would go and take guitar and drum lessons from teachers at the Avalon Music Academy. And basically what had happened was, and this kind of relates more to my story as starting as a musician rather than anything else. Mm-hmm. But in grade six, we were asked to pick an instrument. And I really wanted to play the alto saxophone, but everyone else also wanted to play the alto saxophone. So there was too many altos, or there was too many people who wanted to play altos and not enough altos to go around. And I just dug in my heels and I said, whatever. I'm playing alto saxophone. I don't care about anybody else. This is happening. And then our music teacher said, you know, there's other instruments available, like, you know, the clarinet or, you know, the trumpet. And then he said, there's also the bass guitar. And then immediately my hand went up. I said, I will play the bass guitar, because I didn't want anybody else in the class to play it.
Right.
So what happened was I began playing bass, and my mom, for Christmas that year, she got me American Idiot by Green Day. So, you know, the precipice of their career, in my opinion. And I just remember every day after school just listening to that album over and over and over and over again, because that's a very critical year. Whatever music is coming out when you're 11 or 12, or, you know, kind of that preteen, early teens era, is the music that you're going to identify with as part of, you know, who you are.
Yeah.
And so I started to identify with, you know, this Green Day brand of the rock and roll culture.
Make that the best. a voice that cuts like a knife.
And so I said, okay, well, I want to do more. This is really fun, like playing bass in class and stuff, but I want to play more music. And so I begged my mom, and I was like, Mom, you know, can you please get me a bass? Like, I will do anything to have a bass. You know, there's this rent to own program,
right?
Through Long McQuaid, you know, it's like small payments. I'll do literally whatever it takes to get a bass. And then, because I was playing bass in class and I wanted to play bass outside of the class. And she said, okay, well, let me think about it. Cause we didn't like have like a ton of money growing up. So basically she came back and she said, okay, so what's going to happen is you're not going to get a bass, but you're going to get a guitar, because if you get a guitar, then you'll know how to play guitar and bass. But if we just get you a bass, you'll be forced to playing bass forever. You won't know how to play guitar. So I said, all right, that's
fine.
So she already knew. She already knew that I wasn't destined to be a bass player.
She must have talked to a few people and went, no.
She was like, I want to adjust this course before it goes too far down this
the rabbit hole of money. Well, you could have looked at her right straight in the eye and go, listen, it's not like I'm asking for hockey equipment, lady. Like, that's a lot of money, you know, and she'd be looking at you going, you're no Gretzky, you know. So
at this point, I was just grateful to get anything.
Right.
So she said, okay, I know I have a client, because my mom's been a housekeeper for a long, long time. She said,
sure.
I have a client. They will sell you a guitar and an amp. Or I think it was just the guitar. It was not even an amp. It was just the guitar. It was a Swire Bullet, literally the bottom of the line. And I got the guitar and I just played it endlessly.
Yeah.
And it was to this point where I just said I needed like other things. So I have this guitar, but I need an amplifier because I don't have one, and it's an electric guitar. It needs to be plugged in. So I started coming up with like these schemes to like get more gear, which, you know, if you know, you're a musician, you kind of understand what I'm talking about.
Sure,
you know,
sure.
How can I get the next piece of gear? So we got an amplifier from my uncle, which was this old PV, like PA system from the 70s. And then I was playing that for a while and I thought, okay, yeah, this is really great, but I need another amplifier because this one doesn't have any distortion. I'm listening to Green Day. So Green Day plays with a lot of distortion, and you know, that's what I need to do. And so I got another amp, and so I have this little setup, and I'm learning how to play songs from guitar tabs. And I'm trying to figure out how to play the guitar. And then I thought, about a year into playing guitar, I thought, well, what if I tried to sing and play guitar at the same time? You know, what would that be like? And I couldn't do it at first. It was too hard. But then after a while, you kind of get it. And then, you know, I was able to convince my mom again, can I go get guitar lessons? Because I want to be even better at guitar than what I'm able to do on my own. And she said, okay. So I started seeing this guy named Lawrence, who ran guitar classes at the Dundas Conservatory of Music. And playing with Lawrence was really cool. He had a Morley wah pedal, which I thought was just absolutely like the next level, the most insane thing I've ever heard in my life, you know, getting like those strong Jimi Hendrix.
So now
inspired.
So what you're saying basically is that the further you go down, this has become an addiction to you. Like, you're just so meant for music now that whatever someone exposes to you, like, you're in.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of similar to like, you know, the captain of the hockey team, where it's like, you just play enough hockey and then eventually it just becomes your life. Or you know, my brother's a basketball player. You play so many tournaments and you go to so many practices, it just becomes a part of who you are. but that's the funny thing, and I think maybe that's kind of like the gift of being young in that particular way, like being that kind of preteen, like
right.
early teens age. Whatever you're kind of exposed to at the time, you kind of just latch onto because it's there.
Yeah.
And that kind of happened with me, and it got to a point where there was a restaurant in Dundas called Cook's Corner Bistro. And Cook's Corner Bistro ran open mic nights. And my mom said, oh, you know, you should go one day. And I thought, no, I can't do that. That sounds so scary. You know, like, I can't even sing that well, you know, whatever. And then one day we just decided, all right, let's just go down and see what happens. And so I went up to the Cook's Corner open mic, and I signed up to have my spot. And I got on to, it wasn't even a stage. It was just a corner of the restaurant that was like marked off for the open mic. And I just played all the songs I knew. So like Ramon songs and Green Day songs. I think I played a Queen song. Like at the time, I think I'm like maybe 12 or 13. and I'm by myself. I have a tie on. But it's like a zip-up tie. I don't know.
You and went then, for it.
Yeah. And you know, it was really funny because that particular night was the most packed that the open mic at Cook's Corner Bistro would be. So I played for the biggest audience.
Oh, it's done. So they're still talking about it. It's in the annals of rock and roll now.
Yeah. You know, there's still like middle-aged couples out there, I'm sure, that still talk about the performance to this day, because those were the only people in the audience, you know, no like young people, Gunner, like it was just pure, like we're enjoying our Sunday night dinner.
This is hilarious.
Some live music.
This is awesome.
The thing. Yeah. So this is what happened, and this was the precipice, and I know this is a really long story, but this is what happened. So I met a guy there who was running the open mic, and his name was Mark Dom. So Mark Dom taught guitar at Avalon Music Academy, which was run by Steve Parton. Okay. And so when I finished my set, my mom, I guess, was talking to Mark like while they were talking, because, you know, like when you see like a 13-year-old go up there, like in any circumstance, just like give it, you kind of just immediately get behind it. Because it's like, oh, you know, this is pretty sick. And he said, you know, like, I teach guitar, and I think you would really benefit from me teaching you, because, you know, it sounds like the guitar teacher you have is really good, but it also sounds like he's more focused on jazz, which he was.
Right, yeah.
He played a lot of jazz music. So, and he said, like, I can help you sing, and I can help you play guitar. And I was like, all right, let's do it. So I joined the Avalon Music Academy as a guitar student. And then, you know, I just took guitar lessons a couple times a week. And then eventually I was playing drums in the music room at school. And I thought, okay, I want to take drum lessons. So I'm learning how to sing better. I'm learning how to play guitar. I'm learning how to play the drums. And then eventually it came about, like, oh, there's a rock band class. So you can actually go and meet other kids, and you can play like rock songs together. And to me, I was like, oh, this sounds like the greatest thing that has ever like come about, because I had tried to form a band before, and, you know, I got all the guys together and we were ready to go. And then everybody just left. They were like, oh, I don't want to spend my lunch hour doing this, because I did it at school. And so because of that experience of going to the band classes, you kind of develop what it means to be in a band, and you know, as you start, we start to play shows, and you know, it was all kind of supervised by Mark, who was running the band class as well. And you know, at the same time, we were kind of learning a little bit of the business side and like how to be a little more professional as musicians.
Sure.
And yeah, it really snowballed after that.
Well,
and
this whole thing, to me, it just sounds like that, you know, you were very inspired at an early age to do something, and you had the right structure around you, your mother, to help you along with this. And it sounds like you made some really good moves as a young man to keep the drive, to keep it where you're at right now.
Yeah, my mom, and I know I mentioned my mom quite a lot, but my mom and my dad were very, very supportive, and they just said, if you really want to do this, then we're going to help you do it. And it wasn't a question of, like, you know, what it was going to look like, and I was always, like, very careful to, like, ask for one thing over another, because it was, I just thought it was the most important thing I needed at the time, like, I've never owned a lot of professional gear until recently.
Sure.
But I had this, like, very strong, like, it's like you said before, like, this inspired, like, kind of vision of, you know, let's just keep the show rolling because this is awesome.
Yeah. It's a good feeling when you're into something that you really enjoy. If they always say it's not work if you're enjoying it.
Yeah.
You know, so, hey, it's Gunner. You're listening to Steel City Music here on The Hawk. I'm talking to Rob from the Ruddy Ruckus, and we're just chatting about the band and finding out about what the drive is for the band himself, actually, and what is coming up with the band in the middle of this COVID nonsense that we've been going through for a year where, as you know, everything is shut down. How has the band been keeping up over this time of this year? Have you had a chance to record? Some have been doing it online, that sort of thing. Have you guys been doing any of that stuff?
Yeah, so we'll be making an official announcement on next Friday, but yes, I guess it depends. Sorry, I guess it depends on when this will air. But yes,
this airs on March 19th, 2020.
Oh, okay. So it can be announced today then. Okay, great.
This was in the messages as we were talking to one another way back when. Remember?
Yeah.
You want to make an announcement. So here we are.
All right. Well, if that's the case, we'll be making an announcement today when we have our Casbah show. But we are putting out a new album. It will be coming out in September. We're going to be rolling out singles throughout the summer. And it's a very, very exciting album for us. Really the first professional studio album by the Ruddy Ruckus. It was produced by Luke Bentham of the Dirty Mill and mixed by Dave Schiffman, who mixed Pup and the OBGMs and a lot of my favorite bands. So it's a very exciting project for me and something I'm really excited to put out to the rest of the world. So, yes.
That's awesome. How long did it take for you guys to put this album together?
So in in some ways, Gunner, it took 10 years.
Oh, no, yeah.
In other calculations, it took maybe about a year and a half.
Right.
And in another way, it took about 6 months. It just depends on how you want to look at it, because some of those songs are some of the first songs that I wrote when I first started the Ruddy Ruckus, when it was just me by myself.
Right.
So these songs, some of them are 6 or 7 years old now.
Mm-hmm. That's not such a bad thing, having material going into a studio that you've had from your past, but it only reflects of who you are in that time period. A lot of bands struggle when they go into their next album to have enough material going into for the next album. Are you the type of guy that's writing all the time and has songs ready for your next recording project? Or is it just like, hey, a couple weeks beforehand, I'm going to start writing?
In a perfect schedule, I'll usually write I'll write 3 songs a day. So, and you know, I guess we'll kind of get more into the COVID stuff. But basically, COVID's been really tough for me because it's basically changed the way that I see different activities going into different slots of time. So usually I'll be writing on my commute to work, or I'll be writing when I'm at home. And now that I'm at home all the time, I'm a huge procrastinator.
Oh,
so
no.
For me, it's like,
Right.
You know, whatever. I can do this later in the afternoon, or I can not even do it, and I can do it tomorrow or whatever. So, but with that being said, I have had some good moments. So I probably have enough for another half album, which I'm pretty happy with. If somebody said, okay, we need you to record another one immediately after this, I'm pretty sure that we could do it. But everybody has their own process, and everybody has their own ways of writing songs, and they need different things around them to inspire them to do it. Like, I like to write a lot in cafes where I've gone for a walk. I have some kind of caffeine stimulant in front of me.
Sure.
And most importantly is the energy of the people around me. It's not something that I really understand kind of on like a surface level, but just being around other people and kind of listening in on their conversations or just picking up, you know, the things that kind of make people people. For me, I find results in more balanced and stable writing,
mm-hmm.
rather than if I'm kind of, I've been on my own for a long time. It's a little less focused, I would say.
Not enough. This is for the young and hard to lose.
Hey, if you're just tuning in right now, you're listening to Steel City Music on the Hawk every Friday from 12 p.m. till 7 p.m. I'm your host, Gunner, and on the line with me right now is Rob from the Ruddy Ruckus. We've been talking about music, inspiration, the background of the band, how we got to this point now, the Rocket Launcher label that he started up, and then now a new album that's been produced and is coming out. This is the big announcement on March 19th. And now, which I think is also a dual announcement as well, is another segue. Are you putting this on yourself? But it's a benefit show for the Casbah, an online streaming event?
Yes. Yeah, that's correct.
Tell us about that.
Yeah, so as we kind of have gone deep into, coming up on a year of COVID lockdowns and staying at home, I mean, we've seen a lot of different iterations of how live music is getting out there. We've seen like very little actual in-person events, and you know, it makes sense that this is the case. But we've also seen a lot of development and kind of some new innovations from the venue to enable shows to continue. And as soon as I saw that the Casbah was offering live shows in a live stream kind of environment, I thought this could be a really great way to help out the venue and the staff because, you know, like I said before, it's a business model that relies on lots of bodies in one place at one time.
Yeah. The exact opposite with what we're doing this year. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So those guys are hurting pretty bad. And the thing is, like, I feel very personally connected to the Casbah. I played there many, many times over the years. And I thought this would be a good way for us to, I guess, give back. I don't see it as sort of we're doing a good thing. I see it more as it's our duty as, you know, participants in the live music scene to make sure that live music continues into the future.
Right.
And there's nothing that terrifies me more than living in a city that calls itself a city of music that doesn't have any live music venues.
I'm still stuck on that whole thing when they wouldn't let us play music on a patio. And they kept saying we're the music city. I'm like, really? Because there's nothing on the patio. I don't understand this. Why are you doing this to us? You're making me nuts here. That's a very good thing that you're doing. And I know others have donated to the Casbah in the past and bought their merchandise, that sort of thing, to keep the venue going. I don't think any of us had any idea that it was going to we'd be into a year. We had no idea. We're like, this is different. I've never experienced anything like this in my lifetime where an entire society shut down worldwide. Others have. There's cases of it for the Spanish flu, that sort of thing. But you and I have never experienced anything like this. So a lot of small businesses are just in Hamilton, and I've spoken with people and interviewed them that they're just holding on. So the fact that you're putting something back into a place that where you play is good. The term groundskeeping, like making sure your backyard is okay for everybody, because it's not just you, it's going to be that next band, the younger guys that you just described as yourself, as someone's like, hey, I want to get into music. If I don't have any place to play, that's, you know, well, how am I going to learn?
Yeah. I think the closure of the St. Hollywood was kind of a bit of a eye-opening experience in the sense where it was like, you know, you're being forced to confront a reality where you could have a future where these institutions don't exist. And how would you feel about that? And how would you feel knowing that you did something versus that you didn't do something? And I there's been a lot of chatter among bands on what to do, and you know, even the kind of middle class musician, those guys are hurting just as hard too. We're in a very lucky position in the sense that we're still in that local band tier, where we don't necessarily derive a regular income from playing
right.
you know, all the other sources of revenue that comes in. So I see it as a bit of a position of power where we can say, well, we can do this and not really worry about it. I mean, when I brought it up with the rest of the band, it wasn't even a conversation. They just said, we're just excited to get back together and to have, you know, we're doing a rehearsal there and, you know, we're playing the show. So, you know, we get two nights where we get to play together where we haven't played any shows in a year. And that to us is worth far more than, you know, any kind of revenue loss that we would get from putting on the show and giving it all back to the venue.
Well, all this is happening on Friday, March 19th, 2021 at the Casbah. You're going to be performing on the stage and it's going to be streamed?
It's going to be live streamed. So we had the option of pre-recording it. And I said, hell no. We're doing it live. So if anything goes wrong, you know,
yeah.
it's just the theater of war at that point.
Well,
you know what I mean?
The way I look at it is it's no different than an actual live show. Stuff goes wrong anyway. And I'm sure it'll get fixed in the mix by the third song.
So
you're going to be okay on that. Where do people go to find tickets to buy into the stream?
I think the easiest place would be the Ruddy Ruckus Instagram page. In our bio, we have a ticket link.
Okay.
And you can buy the ticket online. I think they're $10 plus a
tax. The tax will be on it, be like $11.62.
Yeah.
Right,
exactly.
right.
And,
well, that's great, man.
I think it's a good deal. At the very least, you know, if you don't like the band, you know, rest assured that it's all going back to the continued operations of the Casbah Lounge.
I like how humble you are about all this. Yeah, if you don't like me, just think that it's just going to the bar. That's actually a pretty good attitude. So this is great. So on March 19th, you're making the announcement. You're going to be putting out releasing singles off the new project that you recorded with Luke Betham, who's in the Dirty Nil.
Yes.
And you're also doing the live internet show from the Casbah, and all proceeds go to the Casbah. That's great. Where can anyone online find more information about you, sir?
So we're available on the regular social channels. So we have Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram pages. Those are probably the right places to go. We also have a website called thereadyruckus.com. I'm also trying to experiment a little bit with TikTok, but I feel a little bit out of touch when it comes to that kind of new technology. So we'll see how that rolls out in the coming months. But I think there will be something on TikTok as well. Hey, everybody. This is Rob Brown from the Ruddy Ruckus. I just wanted to let you know that we are doing a live stream event from the Casbah Lounge. All the money goes back to the Casbah and the staff. The event will be on March 19th. You can get a ticket from our Instagram bio at instagram.com/TheReadyRuckus. See you there.
Proud to live next to my
I drop the book, and as I turn the page, it sinks to the bottom of a lake of...
Do you have moments where you say later, maybe reflecting back, you know, maybe I crossed a line there? Or do you always kind of feel like you can't go far enough?
You know, I mean, there's there's definitely things I know I've been asked to do that I thought, no, that's too much. But I have to honestly say, I don't think it came from the response of it's too much as it was. I just didn't think it was funny.
Right.
And the times that maybe I did cross the line, I always find out later, because I don't realize I'm doing it in the moment. You know, I used to do Harry Carey, the Chicago Cubs announcer,
yeah,
on Saturday Night Live, and which was really fascinating because, you know, it worked obviously for people who had grown up listening to Chicago Cubs games and White Sox games, but it also worked for people who had no idea who he was. So I would have people come up to me and say, "Oh, I love that mad scientist character you do." I'm like, "Mad scientist? I don't do a mad scientist character." You're like, "Yeah, the guy with the glasses and the crazy white hair." Right. Like, I'm like, "Oh, Harry Carey." He's like, "Yeah, I don't know, but it's so funny." Anyway, but I was doing the first year of the ESPYs,
right?
Norm Macdonald was the host. Big Radio City Music Hall, and a bunch of the SNL writers are writing the show, and they ask if I'll come and do Harry Carey for the bring me out in the middle of the show, and I'm just gonna be confused and not know where I'm at. You know, I think I'm at the, you know, the Grammys, or and then I systematically go and make fun of athletes.
Right.
Well, they wrote a joke for me commenting, and John Elway sitting, and they made a comment about John Elway's, because John Elway has a bit of a toothy smile.
Yeah.
And I made a comment as Harry, and apparently I got the feedback that he was very unhappy, that it was just not cool. And from that moment on, apparently in all the ESPY meetings for 10 years after that, they were like, no more Will Ferrell, Harry Carey moments. We have to make sure we don't have that. So for everyone who thought it was funny, there were a lot of athletes who were offended and upset. But once again, in the heat of battle, I had no idea.
You're listening to Steel City Music.
Leave them at the door. We don't need your pity prayers. We want a whole lot more. The callousness of a senator, the apathy of a man, who with the switch of a pencil stroke could change the rules of the land. Well, we we'll be right back.
You're listening to The Hawk, 101.5 FM in Hamilton, Ontario. It's giving me
a heart attack. You're listening to a Steel City Music Retro Hour.
Hey, my old pal, the Dill, on the line with me right now. Kitty, you still there?
How you doing?
All right. Okay, so new album is out. Well, I guess it's really not a new. It's the B-sides releases off your last album. Why are you doing this now, sir?
Well, a bit of time ago, I made a 52-song record, and I wanted to make a best of on vinyl, and I did. It was called Greetings From. It came out 2018.
Yeah.
But there was still 40 songs left, because I'm just that kind of guy.
Yeah.
So I thought, why don't I just release a best of the rest and, call it a B-side album. And my brother Jackson, shout out to Jackson Hudecki, wherever you are out there.
Right.
He said, no one likes, a B-side record, the word that, or like I was going to call it leftovers. He's like, no one's going to, people want new. And so I just said, why don't I call it like B-side? Like, instead of B-side, just make a little bit of a joke on that and
sure.
remix the songs, remaster them, add yeah. some new parts. So it was nice. I got to revisit them and add new sounds to them and polish them up. And so, yeah, they're coming out. Just on streaming services at the moment. I don't, I'm working on two other albums at the moment, so I don't really want to, blow the budget with those, where the right. other albums are going. So,
right.
Yeah.
So you put 12 songs that you picked, and, do you have time to walk through some of them with me?
Yeah. Well, the first song is called Ashes.
Yeah.
And it's a song about my friend and local, famous architect, celebrity architect. He wouldn't like the sounds of that, but his name is David Premi, and he's done so many. I think he did some stuff at Mohawk College. He did the farmers market and the Central Library. That was all his firm. He's just a local boy. He grew up on Achmar, right near the station,